Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey there, and welcome back to my fellow Driven Women. In this solo episode, I will be sharing my thoughts about something I am hearing about and reading about a great deal these days, and that is rejection sensitivity, sometimes referred to as rejection sensitive dysphoria. Hey, the fact of the matter is, nobody likes being rejected. Nobody likes being criticized. Nobody likes being ghosted. Most people don't like being told no. But if you are self-employed, if you are an entrepreneur, a professional, a creative, or anyone who's offering your work to the world, sooner or later, you have to face that fear. Those of us with ADHD and other neurodivergencies may be more sensitive to rejection, but plenty of other people without a mental health diagnosis are too. So I'm going to dig into that in this episode. I hope you'll stay with me for more. Before we go there, I want to share with you one of our recent podcast reviews. This one is from Jersey LL, who says, "This is an amazing podcast packed full of actionable information you can put to use in your life right away. The episode number 48 interview Diane did with her friend, therapist John Sovic, on how to keep fear from holding you back was so good. I'm going to listen to it over again many, many times." Do yourself a favor and tune in. Well, thank you, Jersey LL, for this awesome review and for supporting the Driven Woman podcast. We really appreciate it. And remember, if you leave a review on the Driven Woman podcast, either at Apple or Podchaser, I will read it on a future episode. And if you are a business owner, I will shout out you and your business and tag you on social media. And if you want to weigh in on what content I feature in future episodes, you can click on the link in the show notes to take the poll called "What's Holding You Back?" I am deep at work on a brand new series on various mindset blocks, and I want you to share with me what you're struggling with, so I make sure that I make content that is so helpful to you. So without any further delay, I want to share with you my thoughts on rejection sensitivity, how it shows up in business, and most importantly, what to do about it. Here we go. So if you are a female entrepreneur, and especially if you are a female entrepreneur who identifies with ADHD, you're definitely going to want to listen to this one. Something I have been noticing a lot lately, because I now work in the online world, and a lot of the people that hire me also work in the online world, is something called rejection sensitive dysphoria. Now, I was a therapist for many years before being trained and certified and transitioning into coaching, which I did starting in 2015. And I've known about ADHD for many years before that. After all, I've had it all my life. I have diagnosed and worked with many people as both a therapist and a coach who have ADHD. And I also passed it on to all of my children. But in the last couple of years, all of a sudden, I started hearing about rejection sensitive dysphoria, literally all over the place. It seemed like it was a term that just appeared out of nowhere, and suddenly everyone was talking about it. Now, I've also been noticing a lot of people referring to it as RSD, and especially saying things online like, "Oh, I had such a bad RSD attack today," or "My RSD is really acting up," or "Can I get disability for my RSD?" And it's starting to get to the point where I just have to rant and I have to bring all of my experience and expertise to this podcast to set the record straight. First, about what rejection sensitive dysphoria is. And then, because I mostly work with female entrepreneurs, is to talk about the fact that while I do not think rejection-sensitive dysphoria should be made an actual disorder, that's a little spoiler alert. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to first talk about some facts and fictions. Then I'm going to talk about who is susceptible to this. Then I'm going to talk about how it shows up in your business in some obvious and kind of sneaky ways. And then I'm going to talk about what can you do about it. So that's give you a little reason to stick around today. But first and foremost, rejection-sensitive dysphoria, what many people are calling RSD, it is not a disorder, folks. If it were, it would be in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, otherwise known as the DSM, currently in the fifth iteration. So the current manual in every psychiatrist and therapist office, or should be, is the DSM-5. You will not find rejection-sensitive dysphoria there. You also will not find it as a qualifying variable or a diagnostic criteria to be diagnosed with ADHD, because it isn't. Many people with ADHD do experience rejection-sensitive dysphoria. And again, in a couple minutes, I will talk about what that is exactly. But it is not a diagnosis. Please stop pathologizing yourself by calling yourself RSD and referring to yourself as having RSD and talking about it as though you actually needed another pseudo-diagnosis. You don't. Now, if it sounds like I'm being all judgy, pull back and understand where I'm coming from. Actual mental disorders can be very stigmatizing, and they can create a tremendous amount of stress and doubt in people's lives. And I have plenty of experience seeing just how that can really overshadow a person's entire life when they get a little bit too attached to the labels. That does not mean that I don't think it's a real thing. It is a real thing. Rejection-sensitive dysphoria is a description, not a diagnosis. It is a description of the actual physical, emotional, mental feelings, thoughts, feelings, and sensations that go along with an incident involving real or perceived rejection. This rejection can be in the form of criticism. It can be in the form of being told no. It can be in the form of not getting any likes or enough likes on our posts. It could be getting ghosted by a client that we've pitched to and thought, it's obvious they want to hire me. So I will get into more detail about how it shows up in your business. But if you are a person who experiences a very strong, very powerful reaction to any incidents of real or perceived rejection, this is what's going on with you. Now, what's interesting is even though everybody in the ADHD community seems to be embracing this term and talking about it, let me scratch that. Not everybody. Many people. Not everybody. Because I'm part of that community and I'm not. So not everybody. But people with ADHD are not the only ones who are susceptible to difficulties with rejection sensitivity. So just for the rest of this podcast, and let me just invite you to join me in this mindset or this philosophy. I simply talk about it as rejection sensitivity. I do not like this term rejection sensitive dysphoria, and I especially don't like the RSD label. Because God help us, we do not need one more little acronym that makes us think there's something wrong with us. The people who are susceptible to rejection sensitivity are many people with ADHD, people with OCD, people with anxiety disorders. And when we step away from anybody who has a diagnosed mental condition, other people who deal with this are the perfectionists, the overachievers, the highly sensitive types, the creatives, the gifteds, the empaths, those who identify as having imposter syndrome or imposter complex. And for the same reason, I have trouble with that term as well. Because when we start talking in terms of complexes and syndromes, it sounds a little bit too much like a disorder for me. And I see how that can really take over somebody's thinking about what they're capable of. So there's a whole lot of people who have issues, let's just say, who struggle, who deal with, and are affected by rejection sensitivity. Well, where does it show up in business? Well, I'll tell you, there are some very obvious ways and some ways that you may not even realize, oh my gosh, this is what's happening. Here are some things to look for. Do you have trouble charging for your work? Actually asking for money for what you do? Are you telling yourself that you need to keep working with free clients? And maybe in the beginning when you're just getting started with coaching or something of that nature, but even the most junior hairstylist gets paid something, right? So if you have gotten into a routine where you are doing a lot of work, but nobody's paying you, or very few people are paying you, or they're paying you a pittance, could it be a form of avoiding situations where you might feel rejected by asking for money? Also, charging what you're worth. If you are working way too hard for the money you're making, especially compared to industry standards, not your imagination, or comparing yourself to some celebrity coach or guru out there, but what you actually need to be making to support yourself doing what you love, raising your prices means risking rejection, isn't it? And sometimes we don't even realize that's what's going on. Here's another place that rejection sensitivity can hold you back in your business. Setting limits and boundaries with people on your team, with people that you contract with, and with your clients. There's something called scope creep, meaning you contracted with someone for a particular engagement, a particular scope of work, and they just kept adding things on. And you thought, well, it's not that much. I can do that. It'll make them happy and it'll make me look really good. But then the scope just creeps and creeps and creeps. And now what you're actually making for the job per hour has just been whittled away because you didn't say no. There again, this could be, there could be other reasons for it. Don't get me wrong. Rejection sensitivity is not the reason for everything, but it is something to consider. If you are doing a lot of bartering, it's an alternative when you're just getting started. Everybody does it, or many people do it. But if you continue to do it and you continue to accept bartering relationships when you actually need to be charging, maybe it's because you're worried about being rejected if you say, I don't want to do that anymore, or I don't do that. If you think that you need to keep getting more credentials, more trainings, more courses, or more certifications in order to feel confident enough to charge money or charge what you're worth, this is another problem that could be traced back to rejection sensitivity. There are so many ways that I see this with clients that I work with. And frankly, I have experienced some of these things at different stages of my business myself. Showing up in a business means these days you got to have a website, you got to be on social media, you got to email your clients, you've got to have some sort of content strategy, whether that's a podcast like this one, a blog, a YouTube channel, lives, whatever it is, to compete in the online world, heck, to even be discovered, to be found. You have to put yourself out there. And if you keep finding reasons to avoid putting yourself out there, whether it's just showing up, creating content, marketing consistently, asking for the business, or if you're able to do all that, but then you don't get around to sending the proposal or the invoice or chasing after those clients that didn't pay or didn't pay the entire amount, it may also be that even when you have managed to market yourself, sell your services, get paid for them, is your rejection sensitivity showing up by not asking for referrals, repeat business, or testimonials? You see, it can be very, very tricky. There can be all kinds of ways that we leave money on the table because what we're really doing is sparing ourselves situations where we might hear no. We may be reluctant to reach out to former clients who may be very happy to work with us again. We may keep making excuses for not showing up on social media, or for showing up on social media, but basically just reposting other people's shit and never saying anything that anyone could take issue with. Now, I am well aware that the internet and social media in particular can be a treacherous place. And if you are a sensitive person, if you are an empath, if you are a gifted, a creative, your nerve endings are a lot closer to the surface than other people's. And it can feel very scary and very painful when you hear no. It can also feel that way when you hear nothing. I've been ghosted by people too, and it's very discouraging and frankly very disorienting when you do a strategy call with someone. They meet your criteria. You seem to meet theirs. They say it would be great to work with you. You ask, can I send you a proposal, an agreement, an invoice, however your process is, and then nothing. Very confusing. I mean, for anybody who's experienced that in the dating world, I don't have to tell you, like, you can ruminate about that shit for weeks. It's no different in business. Or how about networking? Are you holding back from networking, whether that's following influencers that you'd like to get to know, pitching that perfect podcast guest because you think she might be a little out of your league? She might say no, she might ignore you. Because what would that mean? You know, part of the reason why so many of us experience rejection sensitivity, and frankly, this is why I talk about it as rejection sensitivity rather than calling it rejection sensitive dysphoria. The experience may be much more pronounced in a person who has ADHD or another mental condition, but if you are a female entrepreneur who is representing your work on the internet, you are experiencing this to one degree or another. It's not an either or, it's a both and it's a matter of degree. I think we all need to deal with this. And if you want to be successful in online business and you want to stay in the game and you want to make this your lifestyle and the way you support yourself, these are things you need to address. I have some wonderful colleagues, some of whom will be coming on the podcast soon, who will be talking to us about how to get better at selling, how to feel more comfortable being visible, and other things related. But I just wanted to come on this time on this solo episode, very unscripted, very off the top of my head. I just got back from vacation, so my brain is a little more spacious than usual. And just to say that if this is you, you are not broken, you are not alone, there's nothing wrong with you, you don't need more courses or more certifications, but it is a real struggle, and I want to help you with this. I think this is a really important topic. As a matter of fact, it's very much related to this whole imposter situation where it seems like the most talented, the most creative, the most brilliant, the most gifted, the people whose work most needs to get out into the world are the very ones who experience rejection sensitivity and imposter issues most profoundly. So this is important work. I want to help you with this. But for now, because I like to keep the solo episodes on the shorter side, and we just had this very beautiful, long conversation in the last episode with Angela Prophet. If you did not hear episode 52, oh my goodness, it was over an hour, but so much juicy goodness that even though I was there, I went back and listened to it again. She's amazing. But there will be more to come on this topic. But all I want to say for now is that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you if you are sensitive to criticism. But what it does mean is that you need some tools and some strategies for managing this, or it's going to be very difficult to support yourself doing the work you love, because every time you ask someone to pay you for that work, it can feel like your self-esteem is on the line. And that's not good. It's also not sustainable. So for now, I want to share with you the things that I do. I do a lot of my own self-coaching work, and it's along the lines of the same things that I teach my clients. But I also do journaling work. I do affirmations. I meditate. And I also make sure that I get some vigorous exercise, cardio exercise specifically, shortly before I put myself in a situation where I may experience rejection. I schedule my consultations with potential clients right after my exercise period for that reason. I've worked on this issue with myself a lot, and I no longer have intense bouts of, you know, feeling disappointed and let down and sad and self-doubting when I hear no or when I hear nothing. But it hasn't been so long that I don't remember what that feels like. So first tip, drain the swamp. Drain the swamp is the term I use for do the thing that you do that calms your nervous system. For some of us, that's a long bath. For some of us, that's going out for a run. For some of us, that's petting your dog or your cat. For some of us, it's dancing your ass off to your favorite music. But whatever you do, it could be tapping, like one of our guests, Kate Morioseff, who was on one of the early episodes. I think it may have been number 32. I'll link to it in the show notes. Kate talked to us about emotional freedom technique. That is also something very good you can do. And we need to get in front of our mindset about this. Just because somebody says no doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, your work, your price, or your offer. And sometimes we need a little bit of practice understanding that that is so, and then training our body and our mind to be in alignment with that as well. So more to come on the topic. Stay tuned. And please, if this is something that you deal with and it's really a big issue in your life and you know it's holding you back in business, send me a message. You can email me through my website. You can DM me at Coach Diane Wingert on Instagram. I respond to every single message personally, and I will definitely respond to yours. Okay, that's it for now. Take good care of you. I'll see you next week. Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
So I remember when we talked about what you introduced as habit stacking, so pairing your habits. And when you did initially bring that up, my initial reaction was like, ugh, like that sounds awful. Like, I don't want to do that. But that was like one of the first shifts that our work together had changed. And that is something that I'm grateful for every day. So the first thing I do in the morning is I go pee. And so what your advice was, take your medication, you know, right after, have your glass of water there in the bathroom. And so that's sort of my daily routine. It's going to the bathroom, taking my medication, contacts, coffee. Yeah. And it's great because it just cuts out any chance of forgetting, which then would lead to kind of lollygagging around. And I'm like, oh, wait, have I taken it? I should take it. Wait, but this one other thing. And so just that really starts off the day so consistently and well. So that is the first thing. And then with regards to the rest of my morning routine, my best friend and I, we live together and we exercise in the morning now. So we've been doing that for the past 4 months, like at least 4 days a week. And so we do Beachbody and it's just really fun because we do have the accountability of there's going to be someone waiting for you. So your butt better be up.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.